You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You know, if you are a regular listener to Science Friday, and I hope you are, you've heard our many discussions about stem cells and debates certainly about them, about the science and the politics of stem cells. And, you know, we tell you these are the undifferentiated cells, some found in embryos, that can develop potentially into any other type of cell in the body. Blood, muscle, heart, brain. Well, in the last decade or so, some researchers have been searching for similar cells in cancers. They say these cancer stem cells are what's needed for cancer to form. And unless treatments wipe out these cancer stem cells, the disease cannot be cured because the stem cells will just make new cancers. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to be talking about cancer stem cells. Could they be the source of all cancers? And if so, how will that change the way doctors deal with the disease, from diagnosis to prognosis to treatment? And what will that mean for stem cell treatments currently under development for diseases like Parkinson's, diabetes, heart disease? Should we proceed with caution or not at all in transplanting stem cells? Might they trigger cancer? Our number, 1-800-989-8255, if you'd like to join our conversation. Let me introduce my guests. Dr. Peter Dirks is an assistant professor in the Department of Surgery at University of Toronto and a neurosurgeon and scientist in the developmental biology at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto. That's in Ontario. He joins us by phone from his office there. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Dr. Michael Clark is a professor in the Department of Internal Medicine and a member of the Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Michigan Medical School in Ann Arbor. He joins us today from our studios of WUOM in Ann Arbor. Welcome to the program, Dr. Clark.
Good afternoon, Ira. Thanks for having me.
You know, we don't normally, I don't think, until we actually did some research on this, that we ever heard that there might be a connection between stem cells and cancer, Peter Dirks.
Well, I think actually it's quite an old idea that was kicked around in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s by pathologists who study the architecture of tumors under the microscope. They saw that it seemed that not all the cells in the cancer looked alike, and some seemed to look like primitive normal cells in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So would you then, is the hypothesis, the idea then, that all cancers start out by stemming from stem cells?
I think so now, with evidence in leukemia and work by my colleague here, Dr. Clark, in breast cancer, and following some of our work in brain cancer, suggests that maybe leukemias and as well solid tumors also seem to derive from a cancer stem cell.
Tell us about that, Dr. Clark, that cancer stem cells were first found in blood cancers.
Yeah, that was found about 10 years ago from a colleague of Dr. Dirks and John Dick in Toronto, when he found that in leukemia there was a subset of the leukemia cells that resembled normal stem cells in some respects, and that these cells seemed to have the exclusive ability to reform leukemia in mice in a mouse model that he developed.
Mm-hmm. And so were they then the idea was to look for other cancers besides these leukemia type cells?
Well, the stem cell field was really really centered, at least in the adult tissues at that time, in the blood system. And solid tumors, it wasn't clear whether they would follow that paradigm or not. Mm-hmm. So
I think we knew that the blood system was obviously a stem cell system, but it was less clear whether other organ tissues were stem cell systems as well.
Was this pretty controversial at the time?
Well, I think go ahead.
I think it's been it seems like quite a new idea for cancer research to sort of reconsider again.
Mm-hmm. Michael Clark, and you proved that there are cancer stem cells in solid tumors, and you discovered them in breast cancers.
Correct.
Tell us about that.
Well, the idea actually came from looking at pathology slides and seeing probably what the pathologist 30 years ago saw. And that was, I was giving a lecture actually on testicular cancer to some medical students, And one of the ways we distinguish a benign testicular tumor from a malignant tumor is by expression of immature cell proteins, or proteins made by immature cells. And what I noticed in the pathology slide is that there were just a few immature cells scattered in a sea of abnormally differentiated but still mature-looking cells in the tumor. And it struck me that this probably was a stem cell population driving tumor formation. Since testicular cancers are rather rare and hard to obtain, we decided to test the notion in breast cancer, where and what we did is Mohammed Al-Haj in my lab developed an assay where he could measure self-renewal as opposed to simple proliferation. And that's the process. Self-renewal is the process where stem cells regenerate themselves. So he developed a model, a mouse model, a modification of the immunodeficient mouse model used for leukemia. And what he found was indeed that only a small subset of the cells could form tumors in this model, in this assay, whereas most of the cells couldn't.
That was really interesting. No one had thought that it only took a certain subset of cancer cells. I mean, you know, everybody must have been thinking any cell can divide into another cancer cell.
Well, you know, again, as Peter said, the notion of cancer stem cells was there, it turns out, about 30 years ago and 40 years ago. And the problem was simply the technology in that you could see proliferation, but you couldn't measure self-renewal. And so the notion had came and went, and people were approaching the problem as if every cell did have the possibility of forming a new tumor. And I think these new assays allowed us to really readdress the issue and find out that indeed it looks like that is what's going on.
1-800-989-8255 is our number, 1-800-989-TALK, talking about stem cells and cancer. Would this explain why it's so hard to knock out some of these cancers? Because they're, you know, you're not getting, if you don't get every single one of the cancers, you may the cancer cells, you may miss a stem cell, and that goes on and keeps going.
I think that's probably true. What we see in tumors when we treat them with the agents, we see shrinkage of the tumors, but then the tumors tend to reform sometime in the future, a few months or a few years later. And if you realize that the majority of the cells are not driving tumor formation, and those cells may be more sensitive to some of the agents that we're using to treat cancer, then it follows that what we're seeing in patients may be exactly what we're seeing in the mice when we transfer the cells from the patients, that a subset of the cells can reform the tumors. And it certainly is consistent with our observations that what we're seeing is sparing of a subset, at least a percentage of the stem cells, which reform the tumors.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Dirks, you discovered cancer stem cells in brain tumors.
Yes, we did. We sort of took an approach similar to Dr. Clark and actually personally thinking about the pathology and the architecture of tumors. It's long been recognized that some tumors, the cells look primitive, like the primitive neural stem cells that exist in the brain. And particularly looking at the expression of one marker in a number of different brain tumors, it intrigued me that only a small number of cells in tumors seem to express this marker. This was a neural stem cell marker identified by Ron McKay from the NIH called Nestin. The problem with that marker is that it identifies a filament within the cells. So I didn't really have a good way to sort of test this hypothesis until Irving Weissman from Stanford identified a cell surface marker that seemed to be able to purify human neural stem cells. And then I tested the idea to see whether brain tumors sort of represented aberrant brains growing in a person driven by stem cells. And using this marker, we could pull out, again, a small subpopulation of the cells that seemed to be key for self-renewal of the tumor.
Can you actually pull out the stem cells and grow them, turn them into cancerous cells if you put them in a healthy animal?
We've not published that work to date. So far, our work suggested that in culture, these stem cells that we pulled out of the tumors were the only cells able to self-renew, and we could keep them in an undifferentiated stem cell state, and then as well, we could turn them into the cells that seem to reflect what the patient's original tumor looked like. And now, doing the same experiments in animals, like Dr. Clark, our data is suggesting that it's fairly robust. It's supported by animal models as well.
Mm-hmm. If a tumor has a higher percentage of stem cells, then would we suggest then it's more aggressive?
Some of our data suggests that that's the case. If you look at the most common type of malignant brain tumor in a child, the medulloblastoma, we found that they contained many more of these stem cells than mm-hmm. did more benign types of brain tumors, suggesting that maybe the number of stem cells in a tumor could correlate with the aggressiveness or even the prognosis of that patient's tumor.
And that was my next question. Do patients, are they now... Is this such common knowledge about stem cells that if you are a cancer patient, they will look to see how many that you have in your tumor for your prognosis?
I think this field is just starting to open up. So there are a few other groups interested in this at UCLA, University of Florida, and other places. So people are starting to consider brain tumors in this way. So maybe with more groups looking at this, they'll look for these stem cells and we'll get better data to see whether the number of stem cells correlates with the patient's prognosis.
Dr. Clark?
I agree with Peter. This is a laboratory-based technique, which actually is fairly complicated and difficult to do. But I think as we learn more in the future, if the association does hold up with number of stem cells and prognosis, that we will start looking at that. But this field is... As Peter just said, it's been known in leukemia for about 10 years and with solid tumors for just about a year now, a little over a year. So there's a lot of work to do before we can take these into clinical tests directly for patients.
Michael, I'd like to add something, is that sometimes there's some types of brain tumors really where we know almost nothing about what makes them grow, and treating them is a huge challenge. And what we found is sometimes a tumor may have the same number of stem cells, but in testing the self-renewal of those stem cells may have different self-renewal abilities. So we may have to start to think to test the self-renewal ability as well as the number of stem cells from these different cancers.
I agree. I think self-renewal is the whole key to what we found. And I think that's really the underpinning of what is driving the cancers. We found, at least in the mice, that there's not a large enough number to really see how much this is going to hold. But we found that numbers seem to correlate somewhat with their growth rate in the mice. But I'm sure there's other factors that are regulating the growth mm-hmm. rate of the cells and the self-renewal capacity too.
We're talking about cancers and stem cells this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Didn't mean to interrupt you, Dr. Clark. Go ahead. Finish with you.
No, that's fine.
When you say self-renewal, does that mean a stem cell turns into a cancerous cell or a stem cell reproduces?
That means a stem cell reproduces itself. So all stem cells, normal stem cells and cancer stem cells, share the ability to self-renew, and they're unique in the cells in our body in that they can make a carbon copy of themselves that have similar capacity to proliferate and similar capacity to differentiate into mature types of cells. And so this is a property that's really unique to stem cells.
Now, what would make a stem cell turn cancerous?
Well, there's two things that can happen. Normally, studies from my lab in collaboration with Sean Morrison and Irv Weissman, and then studies from very many other labs, probably most significantly Gary Van Zandt, have demonstrated that the number of stem cells in a tissue are under very strict regulation by the body. So in other words, your bone marrow, for example, will always have the same number of stem cells, and there is a genetic program which keeps the cells from expanding, because if they didn't expand, because if you didn't have that program, you would always have cancer. That's by definition of what a cancer is. So there's two possibilities. One is that a normal stem cell can have changes that destroy this program that restrict their expansion, and so they start expanding and form tumors or leukemias. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that very early, what we call progenitor cells, and these are immature cells that are very similar to stem cells, and their only major difference is that they lack this ability to self-renew. In other words, their proliferation is going to stop at some point in their life, it can be after 10 or 20 cell divisions, but they're going to stop proliferating. Anyway, it's conceivable, in fact, quite likely in my mind, that there are going to be some instances where mutations in these earlier progenitor cells occur that allow them to gain the ability to self-renew, which was present in their stem cell parents.
So a cancerous stem cell, one that produces cancer, is a mutated normal cell?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, you can tell it by looking at that cell that it is different from a normal stem cell?
No. And Peter should talk about neuronal tumors. We really do this. We use antibodies to recognize specific proteins made on the cell surface of the cells. And we use a machine called flow cytometry, which allows us to distinguish cells based on the pattern of proteins that they express. And so this is really done with a very sophisticated machine that looks at each individual cell and tells you exactly what proteins it makes. And then by looking at this pattern, you can assign it to a different class of cells.
Peter, go ahead.
Some of our work, I guess, one of the problems is we're limited by the number of markers to identify these stem cells and progenitor cells. So our ability to accurately identify those cells is still, we're still fairly primitive with that. But there are a few clues, I think, that from different types of brain tumors that suggest that maybe the cell of origin is coming from a stem cell. The brain can develop an incredibly diverse number of different types of tumors that all look different under the microscope.
All right, I have to break in, Peter, because we have to take a break. But this is a good area I want to return to when we come back. So stay with that thought.
Okay,
everybody, hang on. We're going to take a break and come back and talk lots more about cancers and stem cells. Try to get some of your phone calls in. Please stay with us. As I say, we're talking about cancer stem cells with my guest, Dr. Michael Clark of the University of Michigan Medical School in Ann Arbor, Dr. Peter Dirks, Assistant Professor of Surgery, University of Toronto, and he's also at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto. And I interrupted Dr. Dirks. He was telling us how difficult it is to actually isolate and tell which of those cells are cancerous, those stem cells are cancerous.
I guess what I was saying before the break was that in looking at these diverse different types of tumors in the brain where they, under the microscope, they don't look at all alike, we were able to find the small number of cells that express the cell surface marker I was telling you about before, mm-hmm. as well as this other marker called Nestin. And it seemed like the cell that was able to maintain the tumor, at least in culture, shared these same markers no matter what type of tumor it came from, suggesting, and those markers are normal neurostem cell markers, suggesting that it may be a normal neurostem cell that gives rise to the diverse different types of brain tumors we see. However, like Dr. Clark was mentioning, that we still don't know whether a progenitor cell has reacquired a stem cell ability, turning it into a cancer stem cell.
Does this complicate the whole field now of stem cell research? Because could we be not implanting stem cells that could be cancerous, and we don't know that they are precursors?
Well, I think it's going to be, especially in neural repair, it's going to be very important for us to try and understand what are the mechanisms that make a normal stem cell cancerous, potentially? And also, how does a cancer stem cell grow, and what are the molecules involved in self-renewal in those cancer stem cells? Because they might also give clues as to how the normal cells become the cancerous cells. So it suggests that we need to be a little bit cautious, although I think the chance of turning a normal cell into a cancer is very, very low.
Ira, if I could chime in. So just because we're calling these cancer cells that are driving tumor formation stem cells, we need to emphasize that these cells clearly have accumulated six or seven, four to seven mutations, which allow them to escape the normal controls on expansion. And normal stem cells won't be expected to have these mutations as we transplant them. And as a bone marrow transplanter and as a clinician, we've been using normal hematopoietic stem cells for bone marrow transplant for 30 years now. And the incidence of cancer arising from the transplants is relatively low. It's not non-existent. But again, the cells need to accumulate these mutations. And if we're careful in our transplant of the normal cells, and if they don't have these mutations, it's unlikely that the cells that we transplant themselves will form tumors.
1-800-989-8255. Terry in Milwaukee. Hi, Terry.
Hi, good afternoon. My question goes to the issue of cancer stem cells and blood transfusions. I know that there's solid research indicating that persons who accept blood transfusions when undergoing cancer surgery face some 60 to 70% greater chance of the recidivist rate of or reoccurring rate of the cancer than patients who did not get a blood transfusion. Is it possible that when people are accepting blood transfusions from another person, that they may be subject to cancer stem cells that are in that person's blood or multiple donors' blood when people are accepting blood products?
Dr. Clark?
I think the chances of getting cancer stem cells in a blood transfusion are about as high as getting hit by lightning when you're in your house. I think it would be a very, very, very exceedingly rare event.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Okay, Rick in St. Louis. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Ira. Good afternoon, doctors. Now, my question is, and this goes along with the fact that my stepfather had cancer, and I'm a 7-year survivor of cancer, of a chondrosarcoma. And I saw that there was some research done by Dr. Jonas Folkman, I believe it was, on trying to stop where tumors would be secreting a hormone or something, and they would start up other new tumors. Now, could the possibility that these stem cells are involved in this hormone that when new tumors start arising in other parts of the body?
Dr. Dirks?
Well, I think this is the concept, perhaps, of metastasis or distant spread of tumors, and I think Judah Volkman has been studying angiogenesis and the dependency of tumors to induce new blood vessels to grow into the tumor in order to nourish that tumor, to allow the tumor to grow. So that's one idea about that spread of cancer and the growth of cancer at distant sites depends on these blood vessels. And that's mediated by molecules that are secreted from the tumors that induce the new blood vessels to grow into them. But there is also an idea that perhaps spread of tumors and metastasis may relate in some way to stem cells. If a tumor existing in the body is always shedding cells into the bloodstream, those cells travel to different sites, it may be that only if the stem cell finds a proper home at a distant site where it can get the right nourishment, will it be able to regrow the tumor at a different site, whereas the non-stem cells breaking off may sit around and live there for a little while, but they never grow to form a large enough deposit to cause harm. So I think it's still very difficult to bridge the stem cell, cancer stem cell idea together with this much more developed hypothesis about metastasis and new blood vessels or angiogenesis. I know, I think Dr. Volkman's probably studying whether stem cells release these angiogenic factors.
So do you believe then that for a cancer to spread, it's the stem cell that does the spreading and not the normal, or the normal, the cancerous cell itself?
Right now, I think it's a hypothesis only. There's really no proof for it. Michael, you might want to comment on that.
I agree. It's a hypothesis. It hasn't been proven. There's some very old data in breast cancer patients where people looked in the bone marrow of women with breast cancer and found that a significant number of them had deposits of breast cancer cells in their bone marrow. Yet even with no treatment, only about half of those women would relapse with clinically evident breast cancer. And this suggests that the women that didn't relapse had cancer cells that spread that were unable to form tumors, which is certainly consistent with the notion that some cells are capable of forming new tumors and problems where others can't.
We've all heard how prostate cancer is a very slow-growing cancer and can take, decades to grow. Would that be a good candidate, or is there a way to look for stem cells there and study why that is such a slow-growing cancer? Would it have to do with the kinds of stem cells that are involved, according to this hypothesis?
I'd say the answer to that is yes. And I know here at the University of Michigan that the people studying Ken Pienta, who's studying prostate cancer, is actually testing that hypothesis and looking for stem cells in prostate cancer. And I know other groups around the country who are also trying to see if they can determine whether the cancer cells in prostate cancer differ with their ability, with respect to their ability to form new tumors.
Mm-hmm. We have also seen in some brain tumors that some brain tumors are exceedingly indolent and slow growing. And what surprised us as well is we were able to find a very, very small number of cells in those tumors contain these cells that at least maintain their growth in culture, and they're much more difficult to study in an animal model, but it may be also be true and in slow-growing tumors as well.
Is it possible to take out all the stem cells from a tumor and just see if it sits there and nothing happens?
No.
By surgery? No. I don't think so.
Not by surgery.
We're talking about stem cells and cancer this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Is there any target on them that you can use to attack them differently with, drugs or something?
Well, I think there's a group led by Craig Jordan at the University of Rochester that identified that some of the leukemic stem cells express on their surface a marker that's not found on normal blood stem cells. So using that marker may be a way to target the leukemic stem cell and to spare the normal stem cells.
So in breast cancer, that's the major effort in my laboratory right now is actually trying to identify things, genes and potential targets expressed by the cancer stem cells that if we did develop drugs against them, would not affect normal stem cells.
1-800-989-8255. Suleiman in Tallahassee. Hi, welcome to Science. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Yes, I was wondering, I don't think that it's possible for a stem cell to turn into a cancer cell because don't most stem cells come from the human body, and the human body would see the cancer cell as an attacker, and the stem cells would be part of the human body, so they wouldn't turn into a cancer cell?
Dr. Clark, you want to tackle that?
Well, it's true that the transformed cells or the cells that become cancer are part of the body, but if no matter where the cancer cells are coming from, they're coming from a normal cell in the body, a cell that was normally, that at one point in time was normal. So the notion that what you're describing is actually what we call an immune response, where the immune system, which eliminates foreign organisms such as viruses or germs, would recognize the cancer as foreign. And clearly in a significant number of people, in fact, everyone with cancer, that surveillance system has failed.
I could add something to that as well. I think in many respects, cancers are very different. Cancer cells are very different than normal cells. But in many respects as well, there's quite a few similarities between them that they would. It's conceivable that they could easily escape killing by the immune system.
Okay, Salome? Yeah.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Well, 1-800-989-8255. Just about a minute left. You both described this as a hypothesis. What does it take to get it moved from that to something a little bit more concrete?
Michael? Or
I don't
okay.
care.
Well,
I'll each give you 30 seconds.
Okay.
Michael, go first.
Okay. I think what we need to do at this time is we have to see if we can find targets on these cells that we can eliminate them and see if we, by doing so, we do better in treating patients with cancer. I think that's going to be really the holy grail.
And that's what you're looking for now.
And I think also we need to think about studying tumors in a different way. Instead of looking at a solid tumor and studying all the tissue as a ground-up piece of tissue, we need to sort of tease out the individual cells and study the potential of each individual cells to maintain the cancer. And that might be a new way to give some new insight.
Interesting. Well, gentlemen, I wish you both good luck, and thank you for taking time to talk with us this hour.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Peter Dirks is assistant professor of surgery at the University of Toronto and a neurosurgeon and scientist in developmental biology at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, Ontario. Dr. Michael Clark is a professor in the Department of Internal Medicine and a member of the Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Michigan Medical School in Ann Arbor. Earlier, we spoke with Jeffrey Friedman of Rockefeller University in New York. This program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Berghoff. Charles Berquist is our web producer and our director. Our intern is Erica Altman. If you'd like to write us the classic mail way, yes, we get letters that way too these days, send your letters to Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. Or you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we have Science Friday's Kids Connection, free curricula, free teaching materials we make for students and teachers. Take them with you and teach Science Friday in your classroom. Also, you can download on your Audible player past editions of Science Friday. Take them with you. Listen on your iPod, your other kinds of Audible player. Also, we have all the links we talked about in case you missed it, anything today. Lots of topics we covered. Charles has them up there on our webpage. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.